Hi, welcome to the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater Podcast for January 4th, 2010. My name is John Frusciante.
And I'm Will Hines.
And we're going to be talking to you about the news and goings-on and exciting things at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater.
Yeah, and some shows that are going on this week. And then later in the podcast, we're going to interview Gavin Spieler, who is the sort of like producer of a monthly sketch show called Beneath Christides that's going up Friday at 11.
Yes.
So that interview will happen later.
And then after that, we're going to be talking about some things that interest us.
That's right.
In the third segment of the show.
Right.
A rousing discussion.
A rousing discussion conveniently put at the end in case you don't want to hear
that's right.
Two improv old timers ramble on. But that is there also.
Well, why don't we just get into it, Will?
Yeah, let's do it.
This week at the theater, we have some really exciting shows coming up.
Yeah, what's the first one on our list?
Wednesday the 6th at 8 p.m. we have Dave Hill in Big in Japan.
Oh, cool. Dave Hill is a hilarious dude who does shows all over town. He does a talk show here usually. This is not his talk show, but he does a really popular talk show here at the theater, the Dave Hill
Explosion.
The Dave Hill Explosion,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's a monthly show that happens on Thursdays.
And so Dave is like this soft-spoken, smart, funny dude that is always like very dapperly dressed and has on and just seems to know everybody and is doing cool things.
Yeah.
And in the years that we've known him, keeps showing up in unexpected places. Like he had a TV show on Mojo, King of Miami, I think.
Yeah.
Which like I would see Dave on Monday, say hello to him, and then that show would be like on TV the next day, and he wouldn't have mentioned it. He's like
yeah.
A mysteriously successful person
who is also like playing music all over the place.
Right, he's in his band Valley Lodge.
Yeah, and this show is actually about his band being huge in Japan.
And that's true.
Yeah, he became somehow generated this huge following in Japan.
Wow.
And then went over there to tour with his band. And this show is about the stuff that he learned and saw and his adventures with rocking out and getting addicted to the toilets in the hotel rooms in Japan.
And he actually plays guitar in the show, right? He shreds a bit for the audience?
That's right, yes. He shreds for the audience. So if you like to laugh and have someone shred in front of you,
I do.
This is really the show for you.
Great.
So that's Wednesday the 6th at 8, and then Thursday the 7th, also at 8 o'clock, we have a new sketch show called Trophy Dad, Worst Guy Ever.
So the group is Trophy Dad.
That's right.
And then the name of this particular show is Worst Guy Ever.
Yeah. It was written and directed by a guy named John Phillips.
Okay. And he's in the show.
Yeah.
Right.
And it also features people like Mike Still.
Nice.
Who I know you know, Will.
Yeah, Mike Still is a big performer of the theater. He's in a ton of shows at UCB, really funny guy. He's in the improv team Badman. And he's tall, red hair, very confident, deep bass voice. And yeah, he's hilarious.
So which he's earned. He's earned that confident, deep bass voice.
That's right.
You know?
It's not fake or shallow. It's something that comes from a lot of success. And yeah, I love Mike. That's great. Him being in the show is a great testament
yeah.
to John's good taste and talent for having him in there.
He's great in it, and it's a great show. And it's about this guy, Mace Bacon is his name. And he is the worst guy ever. And he shows up after a 10-year absence in the character played by Mike Still's life.
And tortures him.
Tortures him,
yeah,
relentlessly.
Mace Bacon is a great name.
It is really an awesome yeah. character name for a jerk.
Yeah.
So that's Thursday. That starts its run Thursday the 7th at 8 o'clock.
Cool.
Saturday the 9th, we have the Chris Gethard Show.
Great. At midnight.
Yeah, it's at midnight.
This is the third one of those.
That's right. You participate in the show.
I am in the show. Chris Gethard is a popular performer and writer at the theater. And he, like 3 months ago, started doing this talk show, which is just, as it says, the Chris Gethard Show, featuring his friends and people from his life and weird, embarrassing, and humiliating confessions from his life, which he specializes in.
Yeah.
And so we've had two of those. They've been a big hit, and this promises to be another one. So I don't know what to say here. Like, they sell out. The shows sell out.
Yeah.
They're filled with, like, his fans. And he does, like, a lot of spectacles. This last show, he did a the battle of the Wheel of Degradation, him versus me.
Yeah, hilarious.
Will Hines versus Chris Gethard, where like we would get suggestions from the audience. Each of us would try to make up a joke inspired by that suggestion. The band, Kung Fu Monkeys, which is the house band that plays at his show, would then pick who was funnier. Mm-hmm. Whoever lost had to spin a Wheel of Degradation and perform whatever humiliating stunt was on it.
Yeah.
Which included things like stripping down to our underwear, having a member of the audience come on stage and say exactly what they thought of us in negative terms, getting into an ice bath, huffing a bottle of horseradish and Robitussin.
Yeah.
All these things were done.
You got off to a somewhat rocky start.
Yeah, I lost the first round and stripped down to my underwear almost immediately.
And then just killed it.
I just killed it.
You also had to get into the bathtub full
of ice
a couple of rounds later. But
yeah.
Pretty much.
But I avoided the wedgie. I avoided the other. I won the other round.
Yeah, you ran roughshod over Gethard.
Well, I realized the way to win it was to make all the jokes making fun of Chris. And since the whole show was establishing material about him, I had way more ammunition than he did to make jokes.
So. Yeah.
That was the key to victory.
This show has gotten a lot of buzz around it because Gethard has been communicating with Diddy on Twitter. And so Diddy
has successfully made an agreement that Diddy will be on the show at some point this year.
Yeah.
Not the show this Saturday.
Not this Saturday. But
they've agreed on Twitter that, and Diddy actually called Chris because of Gethard's like relentless Twittering and has agreed to be on the show at some point, which is amazing. A testament to Gethard's desperation, persistence, and persuasive powers on the phone.
Yes. We'll definitely have more information for when Diddy will be there.
But even though this will be a Diddy-less show this Saturday, the last two shows have been hilarious, and I know that Chris is going to do something ridiculous.
Yeah.
He was asking around about stun guns. I'm pretty sure that fell through, but that's the kind of thing he tries to think about when putting his show together.
Yeah, that's Saturday the 9th at midnight.
Right.
And one more thing to mention is Cage Match, the Cage Match Championships, Thursday, if we could go back a couple of days, Thursday the 7th.
Yeah, and I have an investment in this.
Yes.
Because so Cage Match is where two improv teams face off and the audience votes on the winner.
Mm-hmm.
This is the tournament, which is featuring people who went on winning streaks the past year. It's like the finals. So this Thursday, one of the teams is the Brothers Hines, which features me, Will Hines, and my brother, Kevin Hines. So obviously I'm very invested in seeing the two of us do well. But the opposing team is a Herald team called the Scam, former Herald team, which also has Kevin on it. So Kevin will be facing himself. He'll be performing just with me in one half of the show, and then the other half will be with his Herald team.
Either way, he wins.
Either way, he wins, but who will he be more invested in?
That's
who's going to get the real Kevin? Who's he gonna, is he going to throw it either with me or with the Scam? I'm curious to see.
What if he phones it in altogether? Just completely...
Just to make it fair?
Yeah, what if he just shits the bed just all the way through, you know, just so...
Well, I'm interested in fairness. I say whatever level he does, if he shits the bed in my set, he better shit it with the Scam also. And if he does great with me, then he's free to do well with the Scam. But no favoritism, I say.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
Yeah.
So those are the things that are going on this week at the UCB Theater.
Great.
Lots of exciting stuff. And there are other shows as well. You can check the website, which is ucbtheater.com.
Cool.
To make reservations or find out about more shows.
That's right. Or ucbt.net works. It's less to type. I remember that one.
It redirects, right?
That's right.
That's right.
That's the web term. It redirects to ucbtheater.com. Mm. Yeah, so those are great shows.
Yeah.
So come on back in a second, and we're going to interview Gavin Spieler, the producer of another great show this week, Beneath Christides, which is happening Friday at 11.
I believe he brought an entourage of models in as well. Right?
That's his style, but we're only going to be talking to Gavin.
Okay, see you in a second. Okay, welcome back to the UCB Theater podcast. We're here with Gavin Spieler.
Hello.
Oh, hello, Gavin.
Hello, Will and John.
Hello. And Gavin is from Beneath Christides. You are pretty much the executive producer of Beneath Christides.
Yes.
Is that a...
You guys have a pretty strict hierarchy, right? You have a pretty well-defined system of titles.
Yeah.
Tight Boys Club.
We actually call me the shit. I'm like the shit.
That's your official title.
The shit in a good way.
Yeah.
Like, that guy's the shit.
Yeah.
You pretty much put the whole show... You oversee the execution of the whole show.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Well, let's tell the story. What's Beneath Christides? How did it happen?
Beneath Christides is a monthly sketch show with a bunch of the theater's best writers and performers, and we write a new show every month. There's a musical guest There used to be a stand-up, but we're actually veering away from that right now. So
because we want to create a war between improvisers and stand-ups, a culture war.
Actually, we were doing a lot of good for the comedy community, and we're like, we shouldn't do this anymore.
Yeah, we don't want to make any bridges.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leave
there needs
these
to be a clear delineation between sketch and improv.
Yeah. Right.
So you guys put together a full show of sketches every month.
Yeah, that's what we do.
I started to say something and nothing.
Well, the show's been having a musical guest sort of like makes it. And when you had a stand-up, also sort of gives like a variety of things are happening, right? Like there's sometimes you have a stand-up who's a host, then you have the band will come out once or twice, sort of like Saturday Night Live. You'll have like
I like to think we invented the structure that we're
before in. Saturday Night Live. Although that show's been around for 35 years.
Well, I'd like to think that like we're the only show right now that's doing music and sketch comedy.
Okay,
like
but that
you watch music. And
that's not even true in New York.
Well, I think it's true.
Okay.
I think it's
yeah,
true.
I mean, it's okay that you like to think that, but you're going to butt up against a very harsh reality sooner or later.
I don't think so. I think we're going to continue to break down walls.
So this hasn't happened that often before, right, where there's been like – there's sketch groups at who do shows at UCB, but there's not really an official UCB sketch show. So this is the closest we have to that here in New York.
Yeah, definitely. Like it's kind of just people from all over the theater who I don't think – like we have different connections maybe in other groups, but like don't generally – haven't worked together and stuff. And it's also like a wide range of people. Like there's like 10 or 12 writers, 6 performers, 6 or 7 usually, but the cast kind of changes month to month a little bit depending on – who's available.
And it seems to be sort of designed that people who are doing like a lot of other things can still contribute and help to this, right? Like that's the challenge. The people who are really good and are seasoned tend to be sort of like divided amongst a million things. So we can never get them together. Mm-hmm.
Like a lot of the writers, like John writes, right? For Beneath Christides. And for you, like I know you have like...
John's got a million things.
All day.
Has a million projects he's pursuing.
Yeah. I don't know if you can hear this, but I'm actually clacking away on a laptop right now. Just
that's
right
actually
now.
Why I was like, I got to talk to John because he's not paying any attention to me right now.
So you decided to come on the podcast and use the interview as a way to harass him?
Right. Yeah, that's the cool thing about it is you see a lot of people who you don't get to see performing sketch maybe necessarily very often in the cast, and there are people who are writing a bunch of different things, but not really writing together, like you said. It's like a nice kind of like all-star kind of sketch show.
So how does it work with the time crunch? Like how do you divide it up that?
Sure. Well, we do a writer's meeting, which is like usually like 3 weeks before the show probably. And that's just like people getting together, the writers get together and they just like pitch ideas or we'll read through like sketches that have been written. And give each other notes on it, and then I'll give them a date to have scripts emailed to me by, and then which is usually like a week before the show, and then the cast will get together the week this week the show's Friday,
right?
So we get together on Monday and we do a read through.
Okay,
which is pretty short. It's only like 5 days. We're the only show putting together a sketch show in 1 week. We're like the actors have to learn their lines.
That's also definitely not true. Saturday Night Live is famous for having the 1 week development time.
You interrupted me.
I apologize. Yes, I absolutely did.
I wasn't talking. So we're the only show that where the actors are really like, you know, learning these sketches in a week and putting them up, you know.
Right.
So we'll get together Monday and do a read through. There's usually like a good pile of sketches, depending on like this one was over the holidays, so there might not be as many sketches. But it's going to be great, but it's going to be higher quality.
So you're going to see a show put together with the added challenge of people just cobbling things together while drunk and overfed.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be terrible. Don't. and then, like, at the read-through, we'll see kind of, like, what hits with the actors and stuff. And we'll kind of put together a show that's usually, like, depending, like, if there's videos or not, we'll see how many. Because that's something we're trying to incorporate more now, I think.
Well, I saw the last show, which I thought was hilarious. And Gregor did that video of a Nate Smith script, the Adult Reading Rainbow, which was hilarious.
Really funny.
Yeah.
It was great. And, It looked decently simple to put together. I mean, not to belittle it, but I mean, the kind of thing where you don't need a ton of production time.
Right.
but really well done. I thought it hit great.
Yeah, it went well.
You can see that on ucbcomedy.com, listeners, right? Adult Reading Rainbow, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
But the actors were great in it, too. Just even going from the medium shot of Nate Lang reviewing the Bible as a book to then hit the close-up on him, which made him seem like so sinister.
Yeah. I was wearing a giant sweater that I thought was really fun, but it looked like really nerdy.
Yeah.
Which I liked.
It was fun, and that's impressive to do in a short turnaround time.
Yeah. Yep. But there's not going to be any videos this month. Because of holidays.
But it's a great idea.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah,
it has happened.
Idea. Yeah.
But this is where I guess I'm so fascinated by the process because I've just been involved in so many. I mean, I used to be involved in this show, and I used to be, and I've been involved in other shows.
Right.
So you're the shit.
I'm the shit.
Right.
But then I know that Dan Greger, I think, wasn't he the director of...
He directed last month.
That meant he ran the rehearsal and sort of gave notes and sort of coordinated that stuff?
Yes.
So you really are kind of a producer, where you're kind of like the overseeing and picking everybody who's involved and picking the schedule.
It's sort of like there's actors, there's writers, and then there's like me. Like I'm the only... that last month was the first month. Since you directed it, that someone besides me had directed it.
Was that easier?
Yes.
I would imagine.
Yeah, it was a lot easier.
You also contribute material. You also write for the show.
Right, like, I kind of head up the writing and the producing. Like, I'll book the musical guests. Because, you know, I have all these connections to the music world.
When I think of you, I think of Joe Music Scenester.
Yeah, well, you know, I do head up a major record label when I'm not doing comedy.
That's something not a lot of people, including me, up until now.
Right.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
But so musical guests, they're usually, you had Joe McGinty a couple times.
Yep.
Who's like
McGinty and White. Really good. We had a group called Conversion Party.
Right, oh yeah, they were the last
awesome.
Show. Yeah,
Craig
they were
Rowan's
really good.
Friends band, right?
Yeah,
they were
really
great.
Good.
Yeah,
and they tend to be like 2 or 3 person bands because you want to be able to get on and off the UCB
right.
stage quickly, right?
Yeah. Like,
we don't have like a sound stage where they can perform. They have to like shuffle on.
Yeah, ideal is like a man with a piano.
Yeah,
like in the past we've had Elton John.
I don't think
Joel.
You haven't. Yeah, I don't think that's
Rufus
true.
Rufus Wainwright.
Actually, but Conversion Party was really great, but they were not a small band. They were like amps and
it still worked.
Drum kits.
I love the lo-fi-ness. I like the feeling of like, oh, we're in somebody's loft and there's a band in the corner and like these guys are doing like sketches. I think it's fun.
Theater feels very much like a loft.
Yeah.
Well,
which is interesting because it's beneath ground.
It's a subground loft. Yeah.
As far as performers, like, is it people that you select or do people come to you and say, I'd love to do the show? Or what goes in? Is it a little bit of both?
It's a straight up bribe structure, from what I understand, right?
Yeah,
it's however much money you're
a lot
given.
Of payola.
Yes. They could be a type of animal they think I would have fun playing with.
So how many animals do you have at this point?
Right now, I have 14 little animals. Like, it's usually like little furry animals because they're like, you know,
cute
and you know, fun to play with.
Well, who's some of the regular cast members? There have been some people who have done a bunch, right?
Rogers, I think, has done everyone but one.
Ben Rogers.
Yeah. Thomas Middleditch, but he's not doing this month.
But he's done a number of them.
Dre, I can't say Dre's last name.
Vermeulen.
No, she can't say it either.
No one can say it.
No one can
you
say it.
You shouldn't have said it, because now you're cursed.
It's a cursed thing.
I got to, what,
it's
turn
like
around
saying,
3 times and spit, right?
It's like the bad guy in Harry Potter. We're all just supposed to get scared.
Sue Galloway. I'm forgetting people. Maybe.
Mike Still's done a couple. Nate Lang's done a bunch.
Nate Lang, has done most of them lately.
Jim Santangeli did the last one. It was super hilarious.
He's doing this one, too.
Just, he's super awesome.
Yeah, he's great.
Kate McKinnon.
Oh, yeah. Kate McKinnon
yeah.
is, like, my favorite.
She's
like,
great.
She's super.
She hasn't done the last couple, but she's doing this month.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Super funny.
Yeah.
She keeps being busy doing gigs.
And she has a funny one-person show, right? Is that still running? Or
Best Actress isn't running right now, but it was a hit.
Man,
yeah.
yeah. Yeah, it ended last month.
Oh.
It ended its regular run last month.
There's videos of it online. It's totally worth seeing. Her monologue about a woman who's in a Judd Apatow movie within a couple of years is like one of my favorite things.
So good.
It's like a New Zealand or Australian actress who's in a Judd Apatow movie.
She's great. She actually had the only one-person show in New York City at the time.
Again,
also not definitely not true. You have a really narrow view of what is the only thing going on. Yeah, have you heard of Saturday Night Live? Do you know that?
I don't know what you're talking about, but I just want to say it's an honor to be on the only podcast.
I mean, it feels like you right go now home to a black apartment, no lights, filled with right little furry animals that you play with,
yeah,
and have no exposure to comedy
or
really anything at all.
No exposure to comedy?
Except
well,
for
I
Beneath
wrote,
Christine's.
I don't know. I wrote a pretty funny sketch about petting bunny rabbits. So, it was a man in a closet who likes to pet bunny rabbits.
So doesn't sound funny. It sounds sad.
Sounds autobiographical.
One of the bunny rabbits, like, was like Groucho Marx. He had like a big mustache and glasses.
So Beneath Christides is
Friday.
Friday,
yeah, at 11.
11 p.m. at the UCB Theater.
Yeah.
In New York.
Not the UCB...
grocery store or the UCB video store.
Yeah.
Or the UCB log flume.
Friday at 11 o'clock.
Yes.
Yeah. We recommend it.
Yeah, it's really fun.
I'll be there.
Yeah.
Good.
John will be there, so still come.
Yes, come anyway. I'll be there asking you if you think my sketch was funny. As soon as it goes up, I'll be like, that was funny, right? Yeah. Thanks, Gavin. Thanks
yeah
for coming
yeah
in.
Thanks
for check out Beneath Christides this
yep
Friday.
It's the only place you're going to see sketch comedy.
Okay. All right. Not true, but it'll be a good show.
Okay, we will be right back.
All right, we're back. So for part three of the podcast here, John and I want to sort of discuss – well, we try to use this segment to discuss things that interest us in mm-hmm like the New York comedy scene in general. That's what we try to do every time. So
yeah,
this time I thought we would discuss the indie team scene, just the besides performing at like an actual improv theater, there's tons of people in groups in the city that are just like – unaffiliated groups where they just perform wherever they can. Like they'll either a lot of teams will rent out under St. Mark's Place mm-hmm down in the East Village, and they'll do a show, or they'll go to the Creek in the Cave in Long Island City is a place where there's like a ton of shows.
Yeah, huge
Parkside
place
Lounge
for...
way over in East Houston is a place where it's ebbed and flowed in terms of having a lot of improv shows, and then just like a bunch of other places that like teams to sort of show up and be doing improv things.
And a lot of these teams come from, not all of them, but a lot of them come from people who meet in classes here.
Right, people want to take improv and they take a class at ECB and they mm-hmm meet a couple other people they like, and you know, it's really hard to get in a Herald team and those mm-hmm auditions don't happen very often, so people want to perform.
And the way to get better is to do it as much as you can, to do it more often. I've always believed that, you
yeah
know, if you're in a class once a week, or even if you're just performing once a week or twice a month or whatever, it's not as good as, you know, being able to perform as much as you
yeah
can, being in front of an audience.
The metaphor that Ian Roberts uses is piano lessons. Like if you take piano lessons, but you only play the piano during your lesson,
mm-hmm,
you don't get better. You have to be playing in between your lessons.
Mm-hmm.
So an indie team is one of the ways that people can be practicing outside of their class.
Yeah, and I think it's a great thing for people to be able to do. I was in a practice group when I was first taking classes.
Mm-hmm.
That actually most of that practice group became the first Herald team that I was on, just through the luck of auditions. And
right, Petrol, you mean?
Petrol, yeah.
So now what's interesting to me is, so we've been around a while. We're talking like almost 10 years ago, or
yeah
at least 8 years ago or something. And so
2001, yeah.
Yeah, so 8 or 9 years ago. And there wasn't really much of an indie team scene. And the UCB Theater was the only theater in town. And like, there weren't like a ton of performance opportunities. Like when you say you had a practice group, did you guys perform that often?
No, back when we were doing
it. You would just form a group.
Yeah.
Hire a coach once a week and practice.
It literally
and
be
was like, well, I hope we get put on a team or something, because otherwise we're not doing this for any
it
reason.
It literally was just to practice. There was
yeah
no kind of higher aspiration to it aside from getting better at improvisation. And we would meet once a week in Charis, that old abandoned school.
Right, the community
on,
school,
East
9th Street in the East
yeah
Village, yeah.
Which is now all like scaffolded up and everything.
It looks like Escape from New York.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And we would meet in there once a week and practice. Ari Vakitis was our coach.
Yeah.
And that was it. It's just you get together, practice,
right,
and that's it. But yeah, back then
it was frustrating, and it's really kind of awesome over the years. Like, the indie scene has flourished and almost become like systematized in a way that's amazing to me. Like, there's like a circuit, a regular circuit of shows that happen. Okay, like, my brother and I are in a two-person. We do a two-person improv show called The Brother Signs.
And right.
When we decided to do that, we've done it before, but when we kicked into it this year, we're like, oh, we have to practice. We haven't done stuff together. So we called up our friends who were in indie groups, and there's like it's not official, but there's like certain places that book teams on a regular basis. Like, Thank You Robot was hosting a show certain number of Fridays every month down under St. Mark's. And Wednesdays, there's a Herald team called Daddy. And maybe Zuleika were teaming up to do Wednesdays with Harold at the Creek in the Cave, so you could ask them. Boys Club for Men did a Monday night show at the Creek. Yeah. Improv teams' names, and you just say them like they're normal things, are always hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, Thank You Robot contacted me, and then a fat penguin was hanging around. And it was great. I mean, everybody was super nice, and the shows were good, and they were fun, and it was a huge luxury to be able to, like, do a couple of shows. And there's just a huge number of great performers who are in the indie scene. And if you really want to know what's going on, like, you got to check them out, like, now and then. You got to, like, dip your toe in that pool and, you know, go see some indie nights.
Yeah. Yeah, cuz there's those nights, a lot of, like you said, a lot of shows at the Creek, a lot of indie improv shows, and Sidecar and Mad do a show
they do
at the Brooklyn Lyceum.
Right.
Called Mad Car.
Right. That building is beautiful. That's
it,
like,
really
this
is.
Ancient cavernous stone building that feels like the warriors are going to come tumbling in the middle of the show and start a gang rumble. Mm-hmm. But I mean that as a compliment. Like, it looks like a movie set, like this dramatic place.
Yeah. And I guess one of the things to think about is, like, what are your goals when you do a practice group that becomes, and because there's really no practice group and indie team is now the kind of the same thing. I don't think anybody is really getting together and just practicing. I think it's like,
I think it happens, but they either dissipate quickly or they quickly morph into a performance group.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's like, it's important, I think, to know kind of what your goals are and, like, what you're... just like with a Harold team or with anything. Like, you want to get on the same page and know, like, what are we trying to do here?
Yeah,
you know,
is it important for this to be a place where it's just fun and there's not pressure and that's a deliberate choice?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this a place where we're trying to sharpen... Are we just trying to maybe accumulate stage time so we get more comfortable on stage, and so therefore it's all about, like, volume of shows that we're doing?
Yeah.
Are we trying to, or more ambitiously, are we trying to become better actors, or are we trying to become better at a particular form?
Right.
Having any kind of goal that you can measure how well you're doing against is important, and it's tough to do. It's tough for a group to come to a consensus on that.
It seems like part of the thing that makes it tough is there's so many improvisers, and there's so many people that you meet and work with, and a few of the improv indie teams that I've coached and worked with, sometimes people will ask me, well, like, it seems like it's not working out with this person or that person, and, like,
oh, right.
Or, like, I feel like things aren't right with this group, like, what can I do? And
yeah.
It's like, I feel like you should always be, because these groups can kind of come and go
right
as you please, it's important to be performing with people that you really are interested in performing with, and, you know, like, you don't want it to be a drag.
But it's such a judgment call because, you should perform with people you want to perform with. Life's too short.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I've never been on any improv ensemble where there isn't this conversation where such and such a person is causing a problem or such and such a person is, like, being a drag. Like, you also have to be tolerant that it's never going to be ideal is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
There's groups go through periods where different people emerge as the pillars of the group.
Sure.
Over time, and so, like, if you have, I've seen groups go through where it's like, oh, this person is a problem, let's get rid of this person, and then, like, if you do that, then somebody else becomes the person. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I know what you're saying.
It's a judgment. You have to be willing to go with it and be more tolerant. Like, if you're a perfectionist and you wait for the absolutely perfect group of people to come along,
sure,
it'll never happen. Like, you'll never reform, you'll never get a group. I almost think it's better to do the old Joe Wengert theory of being in like 50 improv groups. Like when he was a student,
yeah.
I feel like that guy was like in 50 shows, you know, until you come into the one where you can feel it and it's clicking. Sure. And then, you know, they got Krampf started getting going, and that sort of became his main indie group.
Mm-hmm.
I'm speaking for Joe. I have no idea what the guy's internal experience was, but
yeah,
you know, if you're coming up to the scene, I say be an I think we differ on this. I say be an improv whore. Do everything.
Yeah.
And you'll feel it when something clicks in and feels solid, and then commit to that, and then worry about it.
See, yeah, I do disagree with that, because I feel like people get into too many improv groups. You know, they get into too many things to the point where they're not...
You're not getting better.
You don't focus on what you're trying to do. It's just like...
I know what that is, too.
I guess it's a mindset thing of, like, do you just want to be in a ton of groups, or do you have a specific thing that you're working towards? You know, there's a big difference between I just want to be in a bunch of improv groups and, like, I'm trying to get better and working toward a specific goal.
I guess I think it depends where you're at. If you're taking, like, your second or third ever improv class, I don't think it behooves you to be picky. Mm-hmm. If you don't know that many people in the scene yet, you can't just decide, oh, I want to be a great performer in a mono scene and perform in the way that this group performs. I admire what they do. You probably aren't going to find five or six people ready who will show up and pay for a coach that want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe after, I don't know how long, 6 months or a year of going through my whoring it out strategy, yeah, you have to discipline yourself. You already, all right, I have to step up.
Mm-hmm.
I can't waste time on everything. It's time for me to focus.
Yeah.
I think it might just be what time in your like development you're talking about. Yeah. I'm now going to speak for groups that I have not talked to directly, but just from watching. Like Wednesdays with Harold is a show that happens at the Creek, and Daddy's one of the indie groups, and Zuleika. And they've been together a while, and they do seem to have – they're like, oh, we're going to work on the Harold. We're going to do that every Wednesday. And they, you know, they get better at it. Like they have picked, and those guys, I think the people in those groups, it's their main group.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're avoiding some of that trouble that you're worrying about. I know what you're saying. I've definitely seen it where people are in everything and they end up plateauing because they're too busy running from group to group and show to show, and they're not accountable for growth.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I've seen people who, yeah, I feel just like they're, the goal is to just be in a bunch of things.
It's just numbers instead of quality.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, something that you have to look out for, because when you're studying improv and you're trying to get better at improv, it is a thing of, like, getting better at the art form.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and concentrating on, like, being able to do that and being able to walk into a scene every time and you know, find your way through it, you know, and not just like being able to mention to somebody that you are in, you know, 10 indie groups.
Right. Okay. I see what you're saying.
You know, I think people get caught up in that.
I've had students of mine who I thought were really good, and they said they were interested in being in indie groups, but they were never in any. They were like kind of like they would ask their favorite people from class, and then like, of those six people they asked, four show up, and then two cancel the night of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sort of like, well, those people, get rid of those people. Like they're not as devoted as you. They might be talented, and you might like them, but if they're not around, it doesn't matter. But you can't play with people you just absolutely don't like.
And if you are in a group where the goal is like to just mess around and have fun, and there's somebody who's like, no, we have to be structured and have to have a goal, then like you probably don't want to, there's a disconnect there. Or if it's the other way around, if you're like, we're going to be a great group, we're going to study the Harold, we're going to get better at it, and then there's one person who's like, nah, man, I just want to mess around, then you know, maybe that's not the best fit. Those are the kind of examples I'm talking about.
No, you're absolutely right, although I agree with that. But it's a judgment call, because I've never been in a group where all six heads are pointed the same way completely. There's always some compromise going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's always like the purists who say like, we should be getting notes. We should be doing this form. It should hurt. We should be doing this and it should be like tough and we should be working or it's not worth it. And there's always somebody else who's like, no, man, no way, dude. This is like my release, you know, like this. I mean, if they're as opposite as I'm making the caricatures be,
sure,
it can't work.
Like if that one guy's a surfer dude.
If that one guy's carrying his surfboard around and... But like what really happens is the purist makes a couple of suggestions. The lax person goes along with it and still, but is still into it enough to show up and to work. Mm-hmm. Then they can do it. And the purist guy has to allow that there's going to be shows where it all goes to crap. And it's done so that people can feel the freedom of being loose. Like, you sort of have to, like, give... You have to kind of, like, allow, well, this was your show. You needed this for your thing, and, you know, my show will come next time, sort of.
Yeah.
Like, there is that sort of compromise that happens.
That's true. I think if that compromise is going to happen, it needs to...
It's better if you can articulate it.
Exactly.
And you can say it aloud. It's like, okay, this show is for us to just like... I know Herald teams will do shows outside of the UCB Theater, and they'll be like, you know, Herald Night, there's a ton of pressure, and you're getting notes, and it's like, it's just like, it's a tough task.
Yeah.
And if they do a show like an Under St. Mark's, they're looking to like... just relish in the lack of pressure.
Absolutely.
And that means that there's going to be like silly stuff and doing things that they know maybe isn't the best improv, but they need it. Like, and that's good, I think. Like, and I think it is being able to say it.
Mm-hmm.
This show is for us to have fun. This show, we're going to pressure ourselves to like whatever. We're going to like start grounded and realistic, and that's how we'll measure how we, you know, whatever it is. I think being able to say it out loud is the key.
Yes.
If you have enough in common and you respect the people enough that you can say it to each other and agree, then you're golden. You're golden.
Yeah, and I guess like if you put together a team of people that you enjoy performing with, that you've met at class and you respect the way they play and you think they're fun, and you get together and you have that conversation, like what's everybody, you know, what do people want to do? What are your influences? Like what do you think is funny? Like what do you think a game is? What do you think makes a good scene or a good piece? And everybody kind of articulates it. Maybe everybody's not exactly on the same page about it, but everybody kind of knows what everybody on the group is thinking and where they're coming from. So at least you know, like, oh, this is the guy who just, like, kind of just does it for fun, you know, and isn't necessarily so focused on, like, the advancement of...
But if that person still shows up, pays for the coach, yes ands... acknowledges that there's another, then that can be fine.
Right.
And if the purist, I'm just making these terms up now, can
well,
like...
They're in the lexicon forever now.
Yeah.
if the purist can...
Well, I'm just saying, you can be on stage sometimes and you say to each other, we're going to do this, and halfway through the show you realize it's not going to happen. Like, all right, then you have to talk about it after the show, but I'm just... You're collaborating with 6 to 8 people. Every show is a compromise a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you said is right. If you can articulate it to each other and speak honestly, you're going to be fine.
Yeah, I think that's just what I'm getting to, is like just developing that kind of, just knowing where everybody is coming from, like artistically, philosophically, things like that. I think that's...
But without giving each other notes, this is the trick. Like you can only say, if you start to be like, oh, what you were doing is this, it gets to be really touchy and tricky.
Oh yeah, of course not. No, you never want to be in that situation where you're giving each other notes, unless you're saying like, hey man, that move that you made in that scene was really great. It doesn't go
beyond. Or even clarifying, just being like, when you were doing this and I did this, is that what you were expecting? I feel like that kind of conversation happens a lot after improv shows.
Sure, yeah. We just like had that clarifying conversation after our show last week.
Yeah, that happens all the time. I mean, being in an improv group, I think, teaches you just through trial and error and trial by fire, how to like work like with other artistically temperamented people. Like everybody is a little bit nuts and a little bit like a little passionate about what they're doing, so you learn to like to get along. You know, and I've had groups that were very articulate with each other and some that never discussed anything. They're just like, they wouldn't give a note and they wouldn't take it if the other people gave it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was what it was. And other groups that were very more like self-controlling, like, no, we are going to do this and this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
I think for the people in the indie team scene, a lot of it's what groups they happen to fall into. But then they reach a point where they've been around and they know enough people that they can start to make choices. You see it happen like every like year or so, like people have been around, like reform. They'll like regroup with different combinations of each other because they're like, oh, wait, we are sort of together on this thing.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, communication is key. You know, just kind of knowing, like being able, of course, being able to compromise in the situation, you know, in the moment after shows, and being able to work with people, of course. But like, if you're going to put together a group, I think you want to know just from the start of the group. I'm not talking about a show by show kind of situation.
No, you're right.
Like when you put together a group, like have that conversation. Like, is everybody?
Yeah. When you're at the point where you have a choice, it's time to like put some goals and measure yourself.
If it's a practice group where you're just getting together and practicing and you all just want to get better, that's a different thing. Like the first practice group, the only practice group I was really ever on, we never had that conversation. It was like, hey, you want to play?
Right, yeah, right. Me totally. Too. Yeah.
But if it's like a group that I think is going to be performing, I think you kind of want to know, like, hey, is everybody here? Like, are we just having fun here? I'm just here to have fun. Is everybody else just here to have fun? Or like, are we going to make this a group that really tries to have a presence and a personality and really works at it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And even if there are like little kind of compromises within that, I think you want to have that conversation.
I agree with that.
Great. We've solved it.
Good. Indie team, all problems of indie teams are now solved.
We now fixed the indie team system.
Oh, great. So that's a good place to wrap it up.
Yeah, I think so.
So thank you, everybody, for listening. This has been the UCB Theater Podcast. Thanks to Gavin Spieler for coming on and talking about Beneath Christides. Mm-hmm. Think about checking out Dave Hill this Wednesday, Trophy Dad Thursday, Chris Gethich just Saturday night.
Mm-hmm. And Cage Match also on Thursday.
Videos on UCBComedy.com and the whole schedule at UCBTheater.com.
That is right.
Thank you very much for coming.
See you next week.
Bye.